The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to a Thursday, everyone. I am Nicole Sandler coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and through the magic of digital audio delay on the Progressive Voices Network and other wonderful internet radio stations out there like Netroots Radio. Thank you for being here. Last night was the first part of the first presidential Democratic debate of the 2020 campaign season. Tonight is part two. I guess the B team was last night, with the exception of Elizabeth Warren, and the A team, allegedly, goes tonight. We will recap what happened last night. Lots of stuff to get to. Today is also the final day of this term of the Supreme Court of the United States, and the justices did hand down their final decisions of the year. We will get to all of that. But first, as you know, I like to try to start the show with a little bit of funny. And today we combine the funny with the debate recap, courtesy of Stephen Colbert.
Biggest early moment was a linguistic surprise from Beto O'Rourke.
Oh.
This economy has got to work for everyone. And right now we know that it isn't. And it's going to take all of us coming together to make sure that it does. Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía.
Not entirely sure why he felt he had to do that.
Yeah, because he can.
He's either trying to lock up the Hispanic vote, or he's running for embarrassing dad at a Mexican restaurant. Here's the thing. ¿Dónde está? What? Here's the crazy thing. When Beto was hablaing the Espanol, this is true, in the closed captioning, it just said, speaking foreign language. I like that.
That is
really
funny.
Got through. Really penetrated. But the moderators weren't ready to take speaks foreign language as an answer.
No.
That's time, sir. I'll give you 10 seconds to answer if you want to answer the
question.
Would you support a 70% individual marginal tax rate? Yes, no, or pass?
He wouldn't answer.
No habla inglés?
Yeah, sí. Uh-huh.
That's the tone. He's got the tone.
Right after Beto, Julian Castro had a chance to speak.
You know, I grew up with a mother who raised my brother Joaquin and me as a single parent, and I know what it's like
to actually speak Spanish. The former congressman from Maryland had a chance for a rebuttal.
Congressman Delaney, do you agree?
And Congressman, keep in mind, this is the only time we will be calling on you. So if you speak Spanish, or even Pig Latin, I would Ixpe it ye aune. Amy Klobuchar tried to set herself apart from Trump.
The president literally went on TV on Fox and said that people's heads would spin when they see how much he would bring down pharmaceutical prices. Instead, 2,500 drugs have gone up in double digits since he came into office. Instead, he gave $100 billion in giveaways to the pharma companies. For the rest of us, for the rest of America, that's what we call at home, all foam and no beer.
Huh?
If that's a metaphor you frequently use, Senator, then, as we say back in South Carolina, I'm a shrimp sandwich in a thunderstorm.
Huh?
Every candidate lit up when it came to the subject of health care.
To stay the way it is. Because it's not working for families, but it sure as heck working for them.
It's time for us to make families come first.
You go, Elizabeth.
It should not be an option in the United States of America for any insurance company to deny woman coverage for their exercise of their right of choice.
Nothing like interrupting a woman to tell everyone that you care about the rights of women. Thank you, Governor. About 35 minutes into the debate, as the candidates were talking about the tragedy at the border, Trump finally weighed in, tweeting,
"Boring. Come on, humanitarian catastrophes that I directly caused. Been there, literally done that."
Mm-hmm.
Then it was time for closing statements, and it did not go great for John Delaney.
It's time now for closing statements. Each candidate has 45 seconds. We want to begin with former Congressman Delaney.
Must we?
Closing now.
Oh. And Castro closed with the night's biggest bilingual zinger.
And on January 20th, 2021, we'll say adios to Donald Trump.
Adios. Adios, Donald Trump.
Statement. If only Beto O'Rourke would translate what that means.
Yeah, if only Beto O'Rourke would translate. Stephen Colbert went on from there. I mean, he was live last night after the debate. He'll be live again tonight after the debate. He had AOC on. I didn't see much of the show, but I thought I'd pull some from the monologue because, you know, Stephen Colbert is reliably funny. And these days it's more and more difficult to find the funny for you every day to start the show, just so you know. It's in that monologue, in that part of the monologue that we played, Stephen Colbert did address a lot of what went on at the debate last night. I pulled some clips. I'll share them with you in a moment. And we do have a guest today. As you know, Thursday is usually Howie Klein Day. He's taking a little time off, a little summer vacation, but he'll be back with us next time. Next Thursday is the 4th of July, so I think we'll do a special musical 4th of July show for you. Won't be live, won't be on YouTube, but it'll be podcast and it'll run on Progressive Voices. So at least you'll have, some barbecue soundtrack for your 4th of July listening pleasure. And Howie, you'll be back the following week. But today we'll be speaking with Mike Lux, who is on the Twitters as Progressive Lux. L-U-X. I played a couple of his videos for you yesterday. He's producing these videos on our current political situation as the politics guy. And Michael weigh in on last night's debates, on today's Supreme Court rulings, too. I guess, you know what? Let's get started with that. We'll do it in the form of What's News.
I read the news today.
And we'll do it live.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
Fuck it.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
Fuck it.
All right. And it was a mixed bag. Before we get to the debate, we'll talk about what happened today. The Supreme Court's term ended today. They saved the best for last. And, of course, today there were, I think, five decisions handed down. There were two that we were waiting for. In the first one, the gerrymandering case. Actually, cases, because this, I think, came out of cases in North Carolina and Michigan. And basically, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 ruling along traditional ideological divides, so it's the five conservatives against the four liberals on the court, they said that federal courts have no role to play in policing political districts drawn for partisan gain. I'm pausing for dramatic effect here to let that sink in. Yes, Supreme Court justices said by a 5-4 vote that claims of partisan gerrymandering do not belong in federal court. The Republican-appointed majority says that voters and elected officials should be the arbiters of what is a political dispute. The courts should not be weighing in. So let me read to you from, I don't even know where I got this from, but in my reading of what these decisions meant, here's one I got. The court holds that partisan gerrymandering claims present political questions beyond the reach of the federal courts. This is bullshit. Sorry, that's my interpretation. Back to the explanation. The court's ruling means that the courts will not have a role to play in reviewing partisan gerrymandering claims. Again, as I said, it's 5-4. Kagan dissents, joined by Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor. Kagan began her dissent thusly, quote, "For the first time ever, this court refuses to remedy a constitutional violation because it thinks the task beyond judicial capabilities." The court holds that none of the proposed tests for evaluating partisan gerrymandering claims meets the need for a limited and precise standard that is judicially discernible and manageable. In other words, there's not a good test to use to decide them. So in her dissent, Kagan emphasizes the importance of the issue, writing, quote, "The partisan gerrymanders here debased and dishonored our democracy, turning upside down the core American idea that all governmental power derives from the people." And then she ended her dissent with the line, "With respect but deep sadness, I dissent." Wow. In case you're wondering what any of the candidates think, Elizabeth Warren tweeted a pretty lengthy multi-parter tweet in which she said, quote, "The Supreme Court's decision is an abomination. Five Republican-appointed justices gave the green light to partisan gerrymandering, which lets Republicans pursue their extreme agenda without accountability to the people. It's bad for our democracy, and we need to fight back." Mitch McConnell says efforts to stop gerrymandering are, quote, socialist. Here's a note from me. They're going to call everything the Democrats do over the next year and a half socialist. Doesn't matter if it's Amy Klobuchar or Bernie Sanders doing the speaking. They're going to call it all socialist. It's all bullshit. It's all what you say?
Bullshit.
Yes. Okay. Back to Elizabeth Warren, who writes, "Chief Justice Roberts pays lip service to the idea that gerrymandering is bad, but then hands the keys to our democracy over to a bunch of cheats. Republicans are trying to rig the game, and they're winning." And she concluded by saying, "I'm done playing by a different set of rules. As president, I'll push to require states to use independent redistricting commissions to draw fair districts. And if Republicans keep standing in the way of fair elections, I'll push to end the filibuster." Again, that was Elizabeth Warren speaking out on Twitter today, because obviously this decision from the Supreme Court came down today after last night's debate. Now, I'm sure tonight's 10 contestants will be asked about these decisions today. So that was the first one, the gerrymandering, which is fucked up. We'll get into this a little further in the days and weeks to come, because this will impact us forever going forward. In the second and final case we were waiting for, Chief Justice John Roberts, as he did a few years ago with the Affordable Care Act, once again stepped out to do the right thing, which is kind of shocking when you think about it. But the Supreme Court blocked the citizenship question on the 2020 U.S. Census for now, saying the administration didn't adequately explain reasons for adding the question. Yeah, the reasons they gave were bullshit. You'll recall Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said it was to ensure that they could uphold the Voting Rights Act. That again is
bullshit.
Just bullshit. It's
bullshit.
That's all it is. They're lying. This is what they do. So, and the court, thankfully, is smarter than that. They see through it. So the Supreme Court today dealt a blow to the Trump administration's move to add this controversial citizenship question to the census, ruling that official explanations for the move were implausible and legally inadequate. Again, here's a quote. This might be from SCOTUS blog. In a surprise ruling, Chief Justice John Roberts joined the court's liberals on that point. The high court returned the case to lower courts for further action, raising doubts about the administration getting the go-ahead to add the question before upcoming deadlines to finalize the census questionnaire. Of course, the idiot in chief, the orange moron, Donald Trump, weighed in on Twitter, of course. It's his preferred method of communications. And here's what he tweeted. I got to do the voice, sorry. Seems totally ridiculous that our government, and indeed country, capitalized C, cannot ask a basic question of citizenship. I capitalize citizenship, don't you? Citizenship in a very expensive, detailed, and important census. In this case for 2020, I have asked the lawyers if they can delay the census, no matter how long, until the United States Supreme Court is given additional information from which it can make a final and decisive decision on this very critical matter. Can anyone really believe that as a great country, capitalized, we are not able to ask question or not, or whether or not someone is a citizen? Only in America. He is such a fucking moron. The census is not to count the number of citizens in the country. It's to count the number of people living here. Citizenship is not a question. And so at least for now, they can't ask it. Trump is asking, can we delay it? I don't think you can. Just in case you were wondering, I do not believe you can. All right. Again, as we move ahead in the days and weeks to come, I'm sure we'll get further into this as well. But so it was a mixed bag from the Supreme Court. Good news and bad. All right. Now let's get on to the debate a little bit, shall we? Part one of the first debate of the 2020 Democratic presidential primary is now one for the history books. Part two happens tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. Of course, on NBC. And first, we got to say the biggest loser of the night was NBC. First of all, they were riddled with technical issues. Seriously, they had how long to get this together and they couldn't. And the technical problems were a joke. The screen kept going to black and there were audio gaps in it throughout the whole thing. And then, of course, the big audio glitch, just as Chuck Todd was trying to ask a question about guns, a very poorly framed and very verbose question about guns, then he had to ask three times because the people, the candidates on the stage couldn't hear him. They kept hearing audio from the other moderators who were off stage and allegedly off mic, but their mics were on. It was a clusterfuck. And somebody's, I would think, head should have rolled. We'll see if they're able to get past their technical problems tonight. But on to the meat of the matter. Now, a couple of housekeeping things before we get into the clips. Elizabeth Warren, as the front runner in the first group, certainly got the most questions from the moderators, but she didn't get the most camera time. Oh, no. Elizabeth Warren, I got to tell you, was so well prepared, and she had her answers honed down to get in that 60-second time, allotted time restraint, where they didn't have to cut her off, I think, until like the end when she finally said, screw it. Everyone else is running over. I may as well take as much time as I could get. So Cory Booker actually racked up the most talk time. 10.9 minutes is how long he spoke. Beto O'Rourke was also quite verbose. He was the second most talkative one there, 10.3 minutes. Warren came in third at 9.9 minutes. But this one is really interesting. I don't have how many minutes they spoke, but in terms of word count, this is wonderful. The person who spoke the fourth most amount of words, Cory Booker, had the number one word count. Again, most talk time. Cory Booker spoke 2,181 words. Beto O'Rourke, 1,932 words. Elizabeth Warren was third with 1,637 words. And in fourth place, was Chuck Todd with 1,633 words. He spoke more words than 7 out of the 10 candidates. Chuck Todd was abysmal. He was, I think the word I used to describe him on Twitter last night was tortured. Oh my God, was he bad. I'm sure we'll get into some of the questions. Anyway, and although he was the first to interrupt someone else and take time for himself, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio only spoke for 5.6 minutes. He was the second to bottom. And Washington Governor Jay Inslee was the least assertive, clocking in with only 5 minutes of talk time. Stuff I find interesting. Anyway, and the word count and the talk time charts match up, in case you were wondering. As far as substance goes, the questions ran the gamut from how to fix income equality to abortion rights, immigration, and of course, Medicare for all. Now, if you listen to the show with any regularity, you'll know that I happen to like Elizabeth Warren. Bernie Sanders still my top choice, but I've always liked Elizabeth Warren. I wanted her to run 4 years ago. And so I'm thrilled to see that she's now picking up steam. But as I've been telling you for the last few weeks, I have a number of questions. On some fronts, on some issues, Elizabeth Warren has not been totally forthcoming. My number one question for Elizabeth Warren is about Medicare for All. I want to know exactly where she stands. And thankfully, they were asked that last night. In fact, at one point, Lester Holt asked for a show of hands of who among them, the 10 on the stage, would give up their private health insurance for a government-run plan. 2 of the 10 raised their hands. Elizabeth Warren and Bill de Blasio. Nice. Okay. Then they went to Elizabeth Warren to get her answer on where she stands with Medicare for All. Here we go.
Senator Warren, you signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan. It would put essentially everybody on Medicare and then eliminate private plans that offer similar coverage. Is that the plan or path that you would pursue as president?
So, yes, I'm with Bernie on Medicare for All. And
yes.
Let me tell you why.
Yes.
I spent a big
yes.
chunk of my life studying why
Sorry.
Families go broke. And one of the number one reasons is the cost of health care, medical bills. And that's not just for people who don't have insurance. It's for people who have insurance. Look at the business model of an insurance company. It's to bring in as many dollars as they can in premiums and pay out as few dollars as possible for your health care. That leaves families with rising premiums, rising co-pays, and fighting with insurance companies to try to get the health care that their doctors say that they and their children need. Medicare for All solves that problem. And I understand there are a lot of politicians who say, oh, it's just not possible. We just can't do it. It's have a lot of political reasons for this. What they're really telling you is they just won't fight for it.
Yep.
Well, health care is a basic human right, and I will fight for basic human rights.
Yes, that was exactly the answer I wanted to hear from her. Awesome. And that's how I think she did. Look, Elizabeth Warren certainly had the most to lose last night because she's by a wide margin the front runner of the 10 who were on the stage last night. It was sort of Elizabeth Warren running for president and everyone else hoping for maybe the VP slot. I thought she was great. I don't think she blew one answer. Moving right along, though, Beto O'Rourke was defending the role of private insurers when, of all people, Bill de Blasio interrupted him.
Would you replace private insurance?
No. I think the choice is fundamental our ability to get everybody.
This is de Blasio.
Private insurance is not working for tens of millions of Americans. When you talk about the co-pays, the deductibles, the premiums, the out-of-pocket expenses, it's not working.
That's
How
right.
can you
so,
defend
so for
a system
those for
that's
whom
not,
it is
working?
Not working, they can choose Medicare. For the coronary workers in
Nevada,
who I listen to,
you've got
to
start by acknowledging the system is
for
not
those
working
plans,
for people.
They're able to keep them.
Okay, so there, Bill de Blasio said, screw this, I'm not waiting around for them to call on me. I'm going to jump in. And he was never punished for it. He did it a few times throughout the night. So then John Delaney tried to do it too. It didn't work out as well for him, just saying. But back to Beto O'Rourke for a moment. Beto has seen his poll numbers dropping in recent weeks. He had perhaps the worst performance of any of the candidates on night one. He also seemed to have the biggest target on his back. Fellow Texan Julian Castro, who no one seemed to notice before last night, went after O'Rourke on immigration and his refusal to sign on to Castro's plan to decriminalize border crossings.
I helped to introduce legislation that would ensure that we don't criminalize those who are seeking asylum and refuge
I'm
in this country. If you're
about,
fleeing, if you're
the
fleeing desperation,
asylum,
then
I'm
I want to make
about,
sure
I'm
I want to make sure that you're treated
else.
With respect.
I'm still talking about everybody
but,
else.
But you're looking at just one small part of this. I'm talking about a comprehensive rewrite of our immigration
that's
laws.
Not true.
And if we do that,
that's
I don't think
not,
it's asking
that's
too
actually
much
not
for
true.
People
I'm
to follow
about,
our laws
I'm
when they
talking
come
about
to this
millions
country.
Of folks. A lot of folks that are coming are not seeking asylum. A lot of them are undocumented immigrants, right? And you said recently that the reason you didn't want to repeal Section 1325 was because you were concerned about human trafficking and drug trafficking. But let me tell you what. Section 18, Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Title 21 and Title 22 already cover
if
human trafficking.
This is
drug
a known smuggler
I think
drug
that you should do your homework
that
we're
going
on this
to make
issue.
Sure that they are
if you did your homework on this issue, you would know that we should repeal this section.
This is an issue.
Okay, as you can tell, they were kind of shouting over each other, but I loved Castro says to Beto O'Rourke, maybe if you had done your homework on immigration, you'd be in a better position to be here and debating tonight. Julian Castro is the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under Obama. And he had a few breakthrough moments to emerge as, I believe, the night's biggest gainer. Here is where he first, the first time he spoke up, he was asked about abortion, and I think he hit it out of the ballpark.
Would your plan cover abortion, Mr. Secretary?
Yes, it would. I don't believe only in reproductive freedom. I believe in reproductive justice. And you know, what that means is that just because a woman, or let's also not forget, someone in the trans community, a trans female.
First time the trans community has been mentioned in a presidential debate.
They shouldn't have the right to exercise that right to choose. And so I absolutely would cover the right to have an abortion. More than that, everybody in this crowd and watching at home knows that in our country today, a person's right to choose is under assault. In places like Missouri, in Alabama, in Georgia, I would appoint judges to the federal bench that understand the precedent of Roe v. Wade and will respect it. And in addition to that, make sure that we fight hard as we transition our healthcare system to one where everybody can get and exercise that right.
All right, so that was Julian Castro making some really good points last night. Again, he raised his profile. He was the one on the stage last night who had that breakout moment, although there are some saying that Cory Booker did well too and spurred a lot of, you know, Google searches. On the Nicole Sandler debate review meter, Elizabeth Warren, Julian Castro, and surprisingly Bill de Blasio were the strongest to me. Booker, Klobuchar, Inslee, and Gabbard, aside from the fact that her first answer did not correspond to the question she was asked at all, they all get passing grades, but Delaney, Ryan, and Beto O'Rourke deserve to be voted off the island. Or as I tweeted last night, I want to see them standing on the stage and the floor under them open up and them falling through. That's what needs to happen at the end of each of these debates. The loser falls through the hole in the floor. But that's just me. I just want to see it one day before I die. In other news, we talked about the Supreme Court. All right, we got that. The Senate yesterday passed a $4.6 billion emergency spending bill one day after the Democrats in the House approved their own legislation. Well, the Senate passed it something by a vote of, hold on, I've got it up here. And this is really depressing. The vote was, where is it? 84-8. Basically, cutting Nancy Pelosi off at the knees. Now, it's interesting that 8 senators did not vote. 7 of them are running for president. And that's why they're not in Washington, D.C. right now. Bennett of Colorado, Booker of New Jersey, Gillibrand of New York, Harris of California, Klobuchar of Minnesota, Sanders of Vermont, and Warren of Massachusetts. They didn't vote. They will not vote on the Iran issue, keeping saying that Trump can't do anything with regards to Iran without consulting Congress. Mitch McConnell is bringing these things up on a day when 7 Democratic senators are not there. Mitch McConnell is the worst person in the world. Just saying. We'll get into that as well with Mike Lux in a few minutes. Just one last story I want to share with you before we bring our guest on. And that is yesterday, Donald Trump flew to Japan for the G20 meetings, right? At which it was announced he will meet again with Russian President Vladimir Putin. As he departed the White House, a reporter asked Donald Trump what he will talk to Vladimir Putin about. This is how the president of the United States answered a journalist in the White House press corps asking what he will talk to the Russian president about.
I'll have a very good conversation with him. What I say to him is none of your business. Go ahead.
What? What I say to him is none of your business? It absolutely is their business. I don't know if it was a man or a woman who asked the question. This is why we're in this fight. That kind of shit has got to stop. All right. I suppose I should have dialed the phone and gotten our guest ready to go. But I now move into producer mode to dial the phone. Let me tell you a little bit about Mike Lux. I've known of Mike Lux for much longer than I've known Mike Lux. He is a Democratic strategist, consultant, advisor. I'll ask him what words he uses to describe himself. But these days he's going by the term the politics guy, and he's been making videos. In fact, I played a couple of them for you yesterday on the show, in which hopefully. I think he's there. Let's see.
Please press two. Leave a voicemail.
Nope.
Please press three.
All right. No, we're not going to do that. Let's try this again. It would really suck if he wasn't there. Let me try it one more time. Let me make sure I'm dialing the right number. Okay. Well, we're trying to call again. I hate when this happens. Hopefully he'll pick up here. So anyway, Mike Lux has been making these videos under the name of The Politics Guy, in which he extols the virtues of progressive politics. I don't know why he's not picking up.
Thank you for calling Mike Lux Media. To reach Mike Lux, please press 1.
Ah,
to reach Lauren
okay.
Windsor, please press
okay.
2.
Oh, hold
to
on.
Leave a voicemail, please press
Uh-oh.
3, and we will get back to you as soon as
oh,
possible.
No.
Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, no. Hold on. I need to press 1. Here we go. Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Mike Lux. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Well, we are live on the air. I was just explaining to the listeners a little bit about you. Yesterday, I played a couple of your videos as the politics guy by way of introduction. You're someone who has been in the world of progressive politics for 4 decades or so, yes?
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, next year I am celebrating my 40th year in full-time political organizing, so I'm pretty excited about that anniversary, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because I was looking at your bio and everything, we're the same age, and I just realized I have been this year in radio for 40 years. Time goes by
wow.
fast when you're our age, right? It creeps up on you. 40 years in radio, and my industry is in the toilet. But, you know, hopefully you're on the upswing here with progressive politics, because it seems like we finally entered the time for progressives, when the progressive energy in the Democratic Party is taking
yeah.
hold, though that's not without the best efforts of the corporate media and many within the Democratic parties to try to squelch that progressive progress.
Yes. Yeah, no, they will keep fighting all the way until we progressives win, or the entire party implodes. I'm not sure which is going to happen first, but yeah, they will keep fighting us. But I do. I am feeling optimistic. I feel like. I mean, obviously, it could all go wrong,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am not taking anything for granted. You know, I know that Trump could win again. I know all that horrible stuff, and we have to fight like crazy. But I am feeling like the reaction to Trump has been heartening, that it's moved It's moved the country to the left. It's moved the party to the left because people are more engaged than they've ever been in those 40 years we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen people so passionate and so so focused on being involved in issue organizing and electoral organizing. And I think progressives really have taken the party and moved it in a significant way. And you can't help but notice that at like the debate
right.
Last night and I'm sure again tonight. There the candidates, whether they are true blue progressives or not, and of course there's a bunch that are not, but the candidates are talking progressive language. They're talking about progressive issues. Those it's our issues, our message, our language that is driving the entire Democratic debate, Democratic Party debate, and that's such a good place to be in, and so different than for long stretches of my career where that wasn't the case at all.
Absolutely. And it, you know, it's funny because now we're having to fight back on a number of different fronts. I'm consistently surprised, though I shouldn't be, at how MSNBC, for example, tries to put its finger on the scale. Their latest personality that they're trying to promote, God knows why, is this guy Donnie Deutsch, who they gave a Saturday night show to. And apparently he was on last night after the debate opining and saying, let me play a little bit of what he said last night, because I can't even paraphrase it. And I need to, I commend Lawrence O'Donnell for stopping him in his tracks. But this is the kind of crap that MSNBC has been spewing lately.
My issue, unfortunately, and do not shoot the messenger, is the messenger. I do not believe Elizabeth Warren on stage with Donald Trump beats him. And I think if we're honest with ourselves and we look hard at ourselves, I think a lot of people agree with me. And I also think when you can label somebody a socialist, 57% of this country thinks that word is un-American. I'm not saying it's fair.
All right, I have to cut him off because I can't even listen to that anymore. Thankfully, Lawrence O'Donnell called him out and said, there is no fact in what you said. Your conjecture has no merit. I mean, he really put him in his place and they got into it.
That's great.
But, I mean, that kind of nonsense. They have Claire McCaskill on there, like she's some effort, saying, oh, they can't go too far left. They're going to call them socialists. They need to move to the right. No, they don't. And so it's like not only do we have to push back against the Republicans.
It didn't work for Claire
in her
last race.
Exactly. So last night,
what these folks need to understand is the Republicans are going to call the Democrats socialist
no matter
who they nominate,
yep.
No matter what they say, no matter what their platform is. It does not matter. They called Barack Obama, who was quite kind to Wall Street, as mm-hmm. you may remember.
Mm-hmm.
They called Barack Obama a socialist the entire time he was running for office, in office, running for reelection. He was a socialist
yes.
all that time.
Yes.
And it was complete and utter, craziness, but that's what they called him. And people pretty much ignored it. They ignored what he said.
But they echo it.
All of us.
They echo it. The thing is, not only did they say Obama was a socialist, which was laughable, and my response to that always was, if only. They also said he's the most liberal senator in the U.S. Senate, period. And other news organizations would run with it, and it was frankly just not true. So, again,
right.
the media has you got to look at who owns the media. In the case of MSNBC, it's Comcast. Comcast
yes.
threw a big fundraiser for Joe Biden right after he announced. So, I mean, it's always the old follow the money. And the people who should be, the arbiters of objectivity, the media, are not. They've got their fingers on the scale. It's funny. I guess Drudge Report had a poll, and Tulsi Gabbard was the winner by a landslide on the Drudge Report. So go figure.
That's funny.
So Mike Lux, I said what I thought. I was obviously very impressed with Elizabeth Warren. I like her. I had been concerned about a few issues that she has not been very detailed in her explanations, and she sort of wavered a bit on the Medicare for All question. So I loved her answer last night. I thought it was just what she needed to say, and it was what I wanted to hear. But I thought she was like that every time. I also thought Julian Castro surprised me. Because I wasn't expecting.
He was great last night. I loved him. Yeah.
I thought he was very good. And Bill de Blasio surprised me.
Yes.
Now, some people.
I thought he was great. You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just said I thought he was great. I know some people thought he was a little brash and rude. He's a New Yorker. I guess I'm originally from New York. It doesn't bother me. I thought he was excellent.
Well, I thought so, too. I think, you know, the candidates standing at the end that the moderators don't want to call kind of have to be a little brash and rude. But I thought he pulled it off. You know, he was confident. He barged right in. Yeah. But I thought in a way that worked. And the thing about Bill de Blasio, I mean, he's an interesting guy. And I've known him for a long time. He's a quirky guy. He has his faults. But the thing about him is that I think he does as good a job as anybody in the party of talking about, you know, what it means to govern as a progressive, and what that frame is. I think he does a good job of like summing up like this is what progressives are for. This is how we're going to govern, and this is why it's popular. This is why it works. And I think he does a great job of that. So I loved what he did, and I loved what Julian did. Elizabeth was was, you know, on top of her game. Mm-hmm. Did everything she needed to do. I thought those three really shone. I thought Cory Booker had some moments.
Yeah,
Inslee had some moments.
Uh-huh. Right.
But you know, I thought it was great. I thought the only two who just flat out sucked were Beto, who I thought was terrible.
Horrible.
And Delaney, I thought was whiny and ridiculous.
Terrible. I'll add Tim Ryan to that group. He looked like a deer in headlights. He was so out of place. And then.
That's so funny. That's exactly the phrase my wife
really?
Used last night.
Yeah. Interesting.
And then.
Mid-debate.
He really, in one of, I think,
the most embarrassing moments for him, it was in an exchange with, of all people, Tulsi Gabbard. And I'm looking to see. I guess I didn't pull that one. I did. Hold on, let's see if I have it here. All right, this is the clip. Tulsi Gabbard and Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan is talking about the question was, should there we keep troops in Afghanistan? And this is a really long clip. So I'm going to cue into it a bit. So Tim Ryan's position is we've got to be engaged. We have to be engaged over there because we see what happens when we're not engaged. And Tulsi Gabbard said, that's the worst answer I ever heard. And here's a little bit of their exchange.
Listen, I'm going to go down the line here. Well, you know what? You felt like she was responding. You get 30 seconds.
Very
go.
Good man.
Fair enough.
This is Tim Ryan.
I would just say I don't want to be engaged. I wish we were spending all this money in places that I've represented that have been completely forgotten and we were rebuilding. But the reality of it is, if the United States isn't engaged, the Taliban will grow and they will have bigger, bolder terrorist acts.
What?
We have got to have some present there.
The Taliban was there long before we came in.
They'll be there long before we leave.
Deployed to Afghanistan thinking that we're going to somehow squash this Taliban
I didn't say squash them. When we weren't in there, they started flying planes into our buildings. So I'm just saying right now,
the Taliban didn't attack us on 9/11.
He understands that. After that exchange, I just wrote, I think I tweeted, Tim Ryan is history. That's disqualifying right there. It was just embarrassing.
Yeah, you know, it's disappointing because Ryan talks a good kind of populist working people game.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't know enough about foreign policy to know that we've already been in Afghanistan for 18 years,
uh-huh.
And we haven't made a damn bit of progress, not one single bit of progress. It's like we go forward two steps and back three steps, mm-hmm. and forward one step and back five steps. And it's been that way for 18 years. Are we going to be there forever? Is that the Tim Ryan plan?
I guess so.
Anyway, it's stuff like that that you're right. It's disqualifying. And I want all the populace to be smart and good, but they aren't.
No.
And he's trying real hard to be a populist, but he clearly doesn't get it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he was just, I was seeing some people saying, watch out for Tim Ryan. Of course, I think there were voices on MSNBC again. He just doesn't belong there. I think he needs to go join Seth Moulton. Actually, I was kind of upset that Mike Gravel was not on the stage, because I think he would have impressed me in the same way that Bill de Blasio did, because Mike Gravel has great progressive cred. Just the mm-hmm. fact that he, mm-hmm. when he was in the U.S. Senate representing Alaska, he read the Pentagon Papers into the record on the Senate floor. That's the kind of guts we need in somebody, and unfortunately a lot of them don't have them. I happen to have, this came in the mail yesterday, I'm holding it up for the camera for those watching on YouTube, is a pack of Mike Gravel rolling papers. On 420, his campaign is being run by a bunch of high school students who asked him to get into the race. And so they did a thing on 420 trying to get more donations for him to make it into the debates. He didn't qualify for the first one, although they say he's on track to get into the July debate. We'll see. But on 420, they did a fundraiser. If you sent in $4.20, you'd get a special pack of these Mike Gravel rolling papers. So I did it, just for the hell of it. And it's real. These are really clever. On the front, it says, Pentagon Papers, cut military spending in half, end the war on drugs, Gravel 2020. Then if you look on back, it says Mike Gravel 2020. Then along the sides, it's paid for by the Committee for Peace, Justice, and Mike Gravel. And then on the other side, it says addiction is a public health issue, not a criminal one. And then it says made in the EU, which I thought was very interesting. Made in the EU. And in the inside, when you open it up, along the top, it says, send Henry Kissinger to TheHague.com. It's a non sequitur, but it's there. That's why I like Mike Gravel. Now, granted, maybe the presidential debate isn't the best place for him, but I, every time I hear him speak, I had him on the show. He was wonderful, because he doesn't, he's at the point where he doesn't give a shit. It's just
right. Exactly.
He's going to say what he thinks.
That is the great thing about people like that, is they say whatever they think. And he clearly is a strong progressive.
He really is. So Mike Lux, these days, as a, you're running Mike Lux Media, as I mentioned, you're putting out these wonderful mm-hmm. politics guy videos explaining why this is not the time for a centrist, why we need to go for a progressive, that the whole electability question is more bullshit. In the primaries, you vote for your best pick, the person who gets you most excited, the one you really want to see in the White House, because that's what the primary season is for. I love these videos. Like I said, I played them yesterday. Are you just doing these for yourself? Are you working for any candidates? Tell me what you do.
Well, I'm not working for any candidates. I was going to be with Sherrod Brown. I was going to help run his campaign. Sherrod's been a friend of mine for over 20 years. I first got to know him when he was elected in 92, the same year Clinton was elected, and I was in the Clinton White House. And I loved him from the very beginning, especially the fact that he was fighting us so hard on NAFTA, which I thought sucked, even though I was in the White House. Mm-hmm. And as a freshman, congressman, he showed such courage. But then on thing after thing, issue after issue, I mean, he's from Ohio, and he voted against the whatever it was called, the Marriage Act,
the defense
defining marriage between a man,
defense
between a man
of
and a woman,
right?
Yeah, yes, DOMA, right. The Defense of Marriage Act. I mean, he has been courageous on all kinds of things. He's a great populist.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to throw out all the stupid trade deals and break up the banks and do all those things. So I was really excited about him running. when he got out, ever since I've been kind of talking to various campaigns, have thought about joining different campaigns, but I've rejected the offers that I've gotten because I just haven't been excited about, you know, the candidates who offered them. And so anyway, I'm still trying to decide what to do. I may sit it out and then help out in the general in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking all that through, but I love Elizabeth, and she's a good friend. She's been a close friend for a long time. I like de Blasio a lot. I like, of course I like Bernie. Bernie, is great. So there's a number of candidates that are like, and Castro, I'm trying to figure out, but Castro's running a really strong progressive campaign. So I
think Castro's running a good game for, to be VP.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And good for him. I mean, like I said, I hadn't heard much from him, and I honestly didn't know what his bona fides were to be running. But I was impressed last night. I heard enough that I want to hear more. And again, as I tweeted out, the trap door should have opened below O'Rourke, Delaney, and Ryan, because I want to see that at the end of a debate. The loser falls through the floor, never to be heard from again. It's my fantasy. Every 4 years, I want to see that, and it hasn't happened yet. I take great pleasures in small, silly things. Let me ask you this about Bernie Sanders then, Mike Lux, because I'm a huge Bernie fan, have been since long before he ever decided to run for president. I've been fortunate enough to be able to interview him dozens of times over the years, not so much in the last four, but many times before that. And so this is why I'm such a big fan of his, because he's been saying the same things all along. He's been pushing for these things, which for so long were out of the mainstream, and now it's amazing. You hear 10 candidates up on a debate stage all saying universal health care, $15 an hour minimum wage, tuition-free, at least public colleges. So his message that he's been preaching for so long has caught on. But I worry that he's been so damaged by the naysayers, by his detractors, the ugliness that I see directed not only at him but at his fans and followers, I don't know that he could get by it. And that's why it's like, all right, people say, well, you're for Bernie Sanders. Why are you, touting Elizabeth Warren? Because I'm a realist, and I really worry that Bernie Sanders is not going to be able to get through because he's been so damaged.
Yeah, I think it's tough for him. I think part of it is that vitriol you're talking about, which is just crazy. And I have a lot of friends, and associates in the quote unquote establishment, part of the party. And I get on them every time I see any of them do that kind of thing to Bernie. I call them up immediately and say, this is just dumb. It helps no one and nothing to attack Bernie that way. It does, it just reinforces why people support him. So I've been very strong on that, in D.C. and with party establishment folks that I know that do that. But I do think that kind of, sort of constant, attacks do hurt. But I also think part of it is Bernie. I think that it's so funny in politics because on the one hand, you want a candidate who sticks to their message, who is authentic about what they believe, and who will sort of keep pounding away on stuff. But on the other hand, I do think you can almost do it too much. I mean, you have to show people something new.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Bernie is that, not that he doesn't come, he comes up with new proposals. Of course he does. But I think he, he has been so consistent for so long.
Mm-hmm.
He has given essentially the same stump speech for, you know,
years,
for his entire career,
yeah,
right?
He has.
Certainly for his whole presidential campaign 4 years ago, for this one. And I think that, you know, a lot of voters get tired of that, and so I think part of it is that part of it is that people are they still love his ideas, but they're maybe looking for a new, you know, a new vessel, a new messenger.
Right.
I don't know what.
There is his age. I mean, I'm always one to point out, look, Paul McCartney's 77 and Mick Jagger's 75. And they're out there both touring, doing their thing. Bernie Sanders has a hell of a lot of energy, probably much more than I do. And I'm a lot younger than him. But I think the age thing is a factor. And if it's a factor for him, it's going to be a factor for Joe Biden. I'm frankly really concerned about Joe Biden. I think if he wins the nomination, we get 4 more years of Donald Trump. I think he will not excite the younger kids. He will not excite the base. He will not excite the masses that we need to turn out in order to overcome all the hurdles that the administration is going to put up, all the impediments to voting, all of the voter caging and all the nonsense that they pull. We need a huge turnout in order to win, and I don't think Joe Biden can wrangle that sort of turnout. Do you disagree?
I worry very much about that too. You never say never, and it's certainly possible that with a strong campaign and if they put a ton of money, you know, into voter registration and get out the vote and field work, if they had a message that was really compelling for younger voters and people of color and women, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I share your worries about it. I think that it's very hard with an old white guy who is the ultimate Democratic establishment figure. It's hard to get people pumped up. It's hard to get people excited. And I also think, you know, let's face it. I mean, obviously with Donald Trump, he says, you know, six idiotic things a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is harder to get excited about someone who kind of, has the gaffes and screws up and, says a lot of dumb stuff. That is going to dampen people's enthusiasm. And I don't think Joe Biden will ever stop saying goofy stuff.
No, nor do I.
I worked for the man 32 years ago.
Ooh.
And I think he's a very good guy. I love his wife. I really... You know, I was heartbroken when Bo died because Bo was such a great person. So I've got personal knowledge of them. But I can tell you, having worked for him, Joe Biden will never stop making gaffes. it's just in
his
nature.
Who he is, right.
Joe Biden talks and he throws stuff out and he says stuff without thinking about it. That's just who he is. And it's funny. I mean, on a personal level, it's part of his charm. You know, he's like your family member who says dumb, funny stuff, and like everybody starts laughing, right?
But you don't want him in the White House,
you know? Yeah, but it's like as a candidate, it's not a great thing.
No, so, not at all. All right. Well, hopefully, I mean, I keep saying I hope he gets a lot of talk time, because the more he gets to talk, the further deep down his throat he'll stick his foot. So that's what I'm counting on tonight. You have anything you're looking out for tonight?
Well, I'm hoping that Bernie and Biden don't get into a thing where they're just like going at each other in a really nasty way. Because I don't think having that dynamic helps. I think a free-flowing debate with all 10 candidates in the mix is far healthier, more interesting, right?
Absolutely. If they can pull it off. I don't know that NBC has
the chops. If they can pull it off, exactly.
All right. Well, we'll be watching. Mike Lux will be looking out for your next video, too, from Mike Lux Media. Follow Mike on Twitter at Progressive Lux. And download those videos. Thanks so much, Mike. It was great talking with you. I appreciate your input.
Thanks, Nicole. It's great to be on.
Great having Thanks you. Having Thanks me. So much. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, tomorrow, we're done for today. Tomorrow, we got a busy show. I believe, fingers crossed, Jamie Raskin will be here, congressman from Maryland, who I'm really impressed with. We'll wrap up the week with the one and only Digby. We'll get her thoughts on the debates and the Supreme Court rulings and everything else that's going on in this crazy, crazy world we live in. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Keep the faith, baby. Bye.